What do UFO contact, Lucifer, AI, and the Kabbalion have in common? Well, JK Ultra joins us today and breaks it all down from God to aliens, conspiracies, and the programming of women in her explosive new book, Cannot Included. She's here to join us, so buckle up. That's right, we've got JK Ultra joining us today, and this is going to be a good one. We're going to talk about her experience as a UFO contactee, and then we get into some discussion about organized religion, her relationship to God, some ideas about the opposing polarities. She kind of brings a different perspective to these things about Lucifer and the Illuminati, and she touches on this idea about conspiracy theories becoming addictive, which I found very interesting. And then she goes into various aspects of artificial intelligence and how it could be a vessel for consciousness. And we talk about our experiences with psychedelic experiences, aliens, the future of humanity. She gets a little bit into the hermetic principles of the Kabbalion and the possible ascension for humanity into higher dimensions. And we're going to round it out with her new book, Cannot Included. I'll put links in the show notes for all of her stuff, her social medias, which she has a massive TikTok and Instagram. Be sure to go follow her there. She's always dropping real cool videos, especially if you're into aliens or new age stuff. And check out all of her stuff while we're having this discussion, and I will see you on the other side. All right, today on the show, I'm joined with a very special guest that's been navigating the intersections of all the topics we love here on the show: consciousness, the UFO phenomenon, conspiracy theories, pop culture. And she goes by the moniker JK Ultra, and she's shared her story with the biggest platforms out there, Linda Moulton Howe Show, Whitley Strieber, so much more. She's published some of the most viral content online, decoding symbolism, discussing spiritual awakenings, and challenging the status quo. And her no-nonsense approach to revealing a hidden truth leaves an unmistakable imprint on everything she publishes. So today, I'm honored to be joined by JK Ultra. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you. Thanks for that awesome intro.
Yeah, this is, you know, I've been trying to catch up with you for, I don't even know. It's probably been a year or two now. Because right. You've been, every time I'm on socials and I see a new video, like the one that really I enjoyed, and this is, I haven't watched it in probably a year or whatever since you published it, the one about the white rabbit. Like, you just got all these really cool deep dives, and when I watch them, I think, man, I should do that too. But then the reality of building those reels and TikToks, I'm like, that's a lot of time and effort. I don't know if I got the heart for it, but
and you do it just in your different medium, because you do some super deep dives also.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's just the path that I've tread down, and this feels comfortable to me, which it's weird, but anyway, there's a lot of areas we could go, and I know our time is limited, so there is. So on your website, projectjkultra.com, which I recommend everyone to check it out, because you've got a ton of experience in a ton of different areas with a ton of different things. And your resume, I would argue, is more impressive than the great Joe Rogan's, because you've done a bit of everything, which I appreciate, because I consider myself a bit of a Renaissance person, because I've dabbled in all kinds of things in my life. And I think being well-rounded is a lot, you know, it takes someone a lot further in trying to understand and unpack the systems that we're dealing with. And there was a great appearance you made on Linda Moulton Howe's Earth Files, a show I recommend everyone watch, and it's on YouTube is where I saw it, where you just described an experience in this, and I don't know, you know, you would call this a UFO abduction, a UFO contact, but you had an experience with the phenomenon as a child. And on that interview, you walked through it. There were some really cool sketches that you drew for Linda that were on the YouTube video. But I wanted my audience to hear the story in case they haven't. Could you walk us through, and I know this is a big ask and this could take up the whole hour, but could you walk us through what happened in North Jersey there in 1993?
So yeah, I'll give a bit of an abridged version. And you know, that's always kind of an interesting area to go in when you retell stories and like abridged versions, because especially these are the type of things that people, not that anybody has said it to me, but I've seen it many times online that people are like, oh, well, I heard them talk about it on this and then talk about it on this. And there was like slightly different details. And part of that is because of it's the different nature of it. And also say someone like Linda, she's an incredible investigator into this, that she asks the questions and goes deep and has that whole hour plus to get into it. So it happened when I was 5 years old in Jersey City, New Jersey in 1993. From my memory, it seems that it was probably the last days of June or the first days of July. And I have a lot of siblings between like half and sibling and full siblings and all of that. So there was six of us at my dad's house in the backyard, and the age range, I was one of the younger ones. Me and my brother were, I was five, my brother was four. And then the rest of the siblings ranged from like 12 to 14. And so we are sitting, I mean, I believe it's around, you know, from memory, as best as I can know, is around 11 p.m. at night or slightly earlier. My stepmom comes out and says like, okay, it's time to come in. And we're all like, no, we're still out here. And then, so there's this also weird detail that every single person remembers in this situation, which is the couch was in the backyard. And that was just because my dad had just gotten a new couch couple days prior. So there's a couch in the backyard. All the older siblings are sitting on the couch. And then me and my brother are sitting on like a swing set. My older siblings all start like freaking out. They're like, oh my God. Now, I didn't see that a white dove had just flown over them, which one is rare at that time of night. Also, in Jersey City, you know, at best it would be like an albino pigeon. It's not like it's a very like nature-y area. And so this white dove flies over them. They're all excited about it. And then me and my brother are like, oh my God, we're going to see the bird. We come and pull a seat next to them.
Was this daytime or nighttime?
Around 11 p.m.
Oh, okay. And there was a dove at 11 p.m.?
Yeah, it was dark out in Jersey City.
You know what's weird? And I'm going to let you get right back to it. This morning, I was kind of like doing my thing and around the house, and I had the windows open. And I heard this bird that sounded like real different than the birds I normally hear. And I recorded the audio of it and sent it to my ChatGPT. I said, hey, tell me what bird this is because it sounds crazy. And it said it was a mourning dove. And I knew we were recording it. I was like, that's bizarre because I know this part of the story is with the dove. I don't know. Sometimes, as we'll discuss, the worldviews that I hold and you hold might be different in some aspects, but I'm always open to a lot of this sort of woo-woo synchronicity stuff because I've experienced enough of it in my life to be like, dude, there's some weird stuff that happens that I don't know how to explain. But the dove thing is interesting to me. And then also another reason I like your, because I don't believe every UFO sighting story, contact story. Yours is very believable because I've got kind of a decent bullshit radar, I would argue. And I believe you, and the way you tell it sounds real to me. And then you have multiple witnesses on top of all that, you know? So anyway, I'll let you get back to your story. I just wanted to let you know about the dove synchronicity. I thought that was strange.
Wow. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing is also what's crazy with the co-creation of reality. Like, things like that happen all the time. So, and I am going to actually probably compile like I already asked one of my sisters on the podcast. I'm probably going to compile all of my siblings' stories and put it together.
Yeah,
one
that
day.
Was another question I had was, do all the siblings have a sort of, is there any radical different version of the story amongst you?
Yes. So, well, not maybe not radical, but the way sister describes the sound is completely different than the sound that I heard. And then when we get to this other part, I'll tell you one of my other sister's kind of main things that is different. But really the same story of everybody out in the yard, the white dove comes over, then all of us are kind of together at that point. And, you know, the older siblings are like teasing us. They're like, the bird's never coming back. You're never going to see that in the rest of your life, you know? So, of course, like older sisters. And pretty much you know, almost instantly after we all are sitting down together, we hear this sound. And now I vividly remember the sound being like swinging a bat, like, you know, that like whoosh kind of little high pitched, like piercing air sound of like, if you swing like a wiffle ball bat, you know, like that kind of high pitched, but really loud and continuous. And like, almost like feels like it's bouncing off of like the houses, like super loud. And now this moment is compressed into like 1 second, all these things happen. But in my remembering of it, even from that day, it was all 1 second how everything happened at once. And so I hear this sound. We all hear a sound. Like I said, my sister, actually, when I've asked her about it, she heard like just like a boom, like a crazy loud piercing boom. And so I heard this more whoosh sound that was like continuous and high pitched. And so we look up, and like I said, this is all 1 second. And then it's like, there's like, from what I see, it's a black dot in the sky. And then instantly, that same second, it's literally a UFO in the yard across from us, which is maybe, you know, 15, 20 feet away. And there's like a short gate that was separating the yards of the neighbors. And this craft is like, there's like a shed in this person's yard, and it's almost like it's pulsing on top of the shed. Like it's like pulsing on top of it, and like the top part and the middle part appeared to be stationary, and it looked like the middle was spinning. And then, so we also, my dad had a dog at the time, and the dog goes in front of us and is barking at it. And, you know, I mean, at that time, like my favorite thing to do was to read like the letter D of the dictionary and to like read about dogs all day, which is, it makes sense that of course this was my hobby as a kid with the type of deep dives that I do now, but... So I had just learned.
Plus, it was the 80s. It was probably, yeah. Right.
What were we going to do? That encyclopedia collection was so lit. You could find anything in there. And so I had just learned, you know, that when a dog is scared, it'll put its tail between its legs. So it's just like this weird, vivid thing that I remember of that experience, because the dog went in front of us and was barking at it, at the craft. And then I remember looking at the dog, and the thing is like at this point, it was 1 second. So nobody has reacted yet. I look at the dog and I'm like, oh, like she's barking, but she's also got her tail between her legs. And it was almost like this slowed down thought compared to everything else. And it was just like, I looked at her, the dog, and I looked at her tail, and then there was this long shadow cast behind her. And I remember looking at this long shadow, like almost in slow motion. And then the next thing is we're all standing in a line together, maybe a foot ahead of where we were just sitting. And then it was almost like everybody kind of unfroze at the same time and then gets frantic. We're fighting back to the house, you know, like that scene in The Relic when they're all like the monster comes and they're all like... crushing each other to get out of the museum. Like that's us trying to get into the house. And so that was how I remembered the story for 25 years up to the point, more than 25 years, up until the point that I pretty much had talked to Linda. So I went under hypnosis before that, actually, in 2021. And it was QHHT hypnosis, the Dolores Cannon method, which is also a method that I practice. So I've been on both sides of this method. So I am a believer of what it pulls through. And we were trying to get some information around like what really happened that day. And at that time it said it wasn't safe for me to know yet, which is crazy because, you know, I'd already been so down the rabbit hole with all of this stuff. I had seen everything about aliens that was out there. And I was like, that's kind of weird. How is it not safe for me to know? And then like the hypnotist kept kind of pressing and saying, okay, well, what was the like purpose of this experience? You know? And so it said that the purpose of the experience was that I was going to validate other people's experiences, which is why it needed to happen in the physical. And I needed all of these people. And it also said not the purpose it happened. It said the purpose of me remembering it, which implies, you know, most people actually that are abducted or whatever don't remember. It's completely wiped from their memory. So it was interesting. It didn't say the purpose of it happening. It said the purpose of me remembering was to validate other people's experience, which I didn't know I was going to be doing this JK Ultra stuff at that time. I was still working in a restaurant. I was like, how am I going to validate other people's experience? Even though I do have a weird gift of anywhere I go, someone will randomly be like, you know, I saw a UFO one time. I'm like, I believe you.
Yeah. 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 I'm dying to see a UFO. I remember when I was a teenager, me and my buddy were walking home late at night, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night, whatever it was, and we were like screaming up to the skies. We were like, we want to see a UFO, like bring it on. And obviously it didn't happen, but I had an experience in December of 2024, because every night I take my dog out front to go to the bathroom in the front yard, and I'm always looking in the skies, right? I live in Utah, so it's squatchy territory out here. And I saw a set of sort of parallel lights manifest close enough, like, I don't know how to describe it. It was pretty close. Two lights sort of manifested, moved, you know, however far in the sky, and then disappeared. No clouds in the sky at all. So like that, I call my UFO sighting, but it kind of sucked. Like I want the spiritual experience of like my mind being blown and like, oh shit, we're not alone. Like, but so it wasn't that, but I'm always open to that. And I'm always wondering, about that. So to get back to your story, the siblings, how do the testimonies go?
So the difference, actually. Yeah. So the difference, my one sister who I interviewed on my podcast, she has almost the identical story, except the sound is this like crazy boom, like ear piercing boom at that time. And then also she doesn't have the recollection of looking up and seeing it. She says it was the boom and then it was there at the same second. And then she also has, I remember I ran to the house. I was the first one running to the house, and she says that she felt frozen after, that she didn't run back to the house with everybody. So when everybody kind of unfroze and ran back to the house, she said she was just like still standing there, which I didn't see. She was still standing there because I was out. And then my other sister, who's older, I think she was around 14 when it happened. She says when she ended up listening to like randomly coming across the Linda Moulton Howe thing, and she was like, oh, you forgot the shadow person. And I was like, what shadow person? What are you talking about? So at that point, when I saw the shadow cast behind the dog, and then there was a blip of time. So we were facing this neighbor's yard that it was pulsing in. And then there was another yard behind us, because all the houses are, you know, pretty much connected. And she said that at that point, she looked behind and that there was this tall shadow, no detailed figure that was standing in the yard right behind us, which was probably, you know, a foot behind us because we were pretty much almost against the gate of the yard next to us. So that's another interesting detail is I had never heard of this until recently, that she's like, oh yeah, you forgot like the shadow creature. I'm like, shadow creature? This is my first time hearing it. And so she said that it was weird, which is common actually in like the abduction phenomenon, is that this weird rationalization that happens in the mind. She said she saw this shadow and then she was just like, oh, Miss So-and-so must be gardening. But it like never added up in her head, because why would, it was obviously not the neighbor gardening. But she said in her mind that that's like what it was like telling her as she was like scared looking at this thing, that she was like, oh, it must be the neighbor gardening. So there's a lot of like weird rationalization that happens with encounters altogether. Like your brain protects yourself. And then what's interesting is because I do that style of hypnosis, a lot of clients will ask about some light they saw in the sky or some weird thing that happened or some missing time. And they want to ask, you know, their subconscious mind and higher self, what happened that night.
And that's what the hypnosis is for, right?
Right.
Okay.
And so, and it's also for healing, probably healing first, but also the curiosity of these weird things that have happened in our life. And so what is interesting is this common thread that comes up when people ask that question is that it's almost like these safe enough encounters happen that aren't really scary or traumatic, but it's enough for your brain to have a reference point to kind of integrate disclosure eventually on the planet. That basically, if you have some weird memory that you're like, well, I did see something in the sky once, as we get more close to there is other life, it's like an integration that's like allowing humanity to kind of be able to like swallow this pill, so to speak. So it like stays in their memory as almost like it could be true, it couldn't be true. And they stay in like a safe place of rationalization with it, but that it's kind of purposeful so that when disclosure happens, because people want disclosure to look like, okay, aliens on the White House lawn. And it's just like, boom, this is it. We've been lying the whole fucking time.
And unzip the reptilian mask. Yeah.
And people don't realize that will cause like an actual quantum explosion if everybody on the planet shits their pants at the same time.
Right, right.
So it's actually very safe. Like, of course, my ideal fantasy disclosure would be something cool like that. Like, you know, Nancy Pelosi reveals herself. But like the true disclosure is like your experience, which is like, okay, I saw these lights in the sky. And then over time, this kind of slow drip of maybe there's something. Okay, there is something, but we don't know what. That slow drip is the safest for us to be able to integrate the information in a way that's not going to like rupture our government, religions, and whether you like government or religion, if they disappear, everything's going to hell.
What's your stance on religion? I recall in your bio, were you raised Catholic or not raised any religion at all? Where you stand today with all this, with given all the sort of, you know.
So I was raised Catholic and I kind of never resonated with it. You know, I was always that person that was like, so what if no one ever taught you about Jesus? You know, I'm like, right.
People in these tribal territories in other countries, they just burning in hell? Yeah,
everybody, like, it doesn't except make sense for like, either. Everybody just goes to hell. Yeah. And then I'm also like, well, how could God love us if he punishes us and gave us the free will to do it and then punishes us for you? So that was me in church and in Sunday school. So I did go because my mom like had a mission to like make sure I made my confirmation. So I made up to that sacrament because I had no choice. I mean, I got caught smoking weed the night before my confirmation. So I was really behaving during my confirmation because I was punished. But
hey, isn't it in the Bible you're supposed to use all the plants and herbs that God gave you? I mean, come
right.
On.
And the crystals and all the other stuff that's in the Bible. But I don't really resonate with organized religion. My perception of God is, and I actually had kind of an issue with God most of my life. You know, I never felt like connected. I never felt like God's love. I never felt those things. And I, felt super disconnected always from it. It actually wasn't until I did ayahuasca that I was like, oh my God, I actually feel the love that people have been talking about. And so my opinion of God is more of a pantheistic opinion, which is God is everything. And I don't believe that it's like a personification. I believe that a lot of the perception of God is actually humans projecting onto it because it really mimics a king, a human king. It mimics a human father. And it's really, in my opinion, so much more and unfathomable than that. I believe that like God is in everything. God is in everybody. I don't believe in evil, which obviously people do evil things. Don't believe that there's dark forces. Now that's been a journey for me because when I first got into the conspiracy stuff over 10 years ago, it's so geared towards like evil, Satanism,
right. The
dark forces, spiritual warfare, the battle between light versus dark. And I just, you know, that's the thing is in that same ayahuasca experience the next night when I did it again, I saw all these like conspiracy symbols, like the all-seeing eye and this and that, and all these like, you know, satanic symbols. And it told me, it was like, these are not proof of evil. These are reminders of your light. The only reason these things exist in reality is to remind you of your own light. So if you look at these things as proof of evil, you're still not remembering your own light. And it also said, like, about truth seeking, it was like, be careful with truth seeking because you need to remain a seeker. And a lot of truth seekers are actually knowers now. And they think they know the 100% truth. And you've actually then lost your way on seeking. Mm-hmm. So they said, whatever you do, don't become a knower. Because if you're a knower, then, you know, like, which was my favorite quote in high school when I first heard it, which is, the more I learn, the less I know. And, you know, so then I was kind of like, okay, well, if these are not like proof of evil or proof of darkness, then what about this? What about Bill Gates? What about reptilians? What about this? Like, I don't believe in the devil. Now at this point, you know, I see that the whole reptilian story is just, you know, the devil for a different crowd of people, you know, right. And it's the same story, basically.
I am guilty of being the satanic conspiracy fearmonger guy. And where I'm more open-minded in the fact that, so like I had a similar experience. I grew up in an organized religion. My mother dragged me to church 3 times a week and it never resonated with me. I didn't identify with anybody in the church. I thought they were all a bunch of weirdo squares and I wanted to go hang out with my buddies and, you know, smoke and listen to rap music and do all this stuff. Right. And I was really, when I was 16, she stopped making me go. And that was the last time I went to that organized religion. And then years later, I joined the Greek Orthodox Church and was very fervent for, you know, there's like 10 years where I was like hardcore into it. And then I kind of pumped the brake. Then around this time, in 2011, I started my blog and I was the same way. All these symbols and for a few years, it was really, I was looking back on it. I was very simplistic. I was very much like, that person's doing the all-seeing eye. They're possessed by Satan, basically, you know. and I'm constantly changing, right? And where I'm at on my journey is I still do believe in good and evil, and I'm still Orthodox Christian. Sometimes when I think about or look at these things, I have the same questions you do. I'm like, why would God, who loves us so much, do all these things that seem like he doesn't love us? And there's times when, what I'm saying is, the door is open enough that I can hear your story and your perspective and say, yeah, maybe she's right. I don't know. Like for me, I still feel more comfortable in Christianity, and Orthodoxy has a lot of good answers to a lot of these questions, and I'm not a theologian, so I don't have good sort of debating responses to things. And in some of the books I've read, like Father Seraphim Rose, he talks about Orthodoxy and the religion of the future, and he talks about kind of this exact situation you and I are looking at. We're both looking at this phenomenon. I'm looking at it most of the time through the lens of an Orthodox Christian and saying, oh man, like all these spirits and stuff seems like we're messing around with entities that, you know, could be demons and fallen angels. And you're looking at it and you're kind of like, hey, I've had this experience with the ayahuasca. And maybe it's not really the organized religion is the right answer. And what's interesting is that I did ketamine therapy a couple years ago. I did 10 sessions of ketamine therapy. And it was, I always have to tell people, it wasn't because I did a lot of research before I started. I had gone to a therapist since 2012 when my dad died. And because I started acting all kinds of crazy ways. And I started the ketamine therapy, you know, after 10 years of person-to-person therapy, and it really helped me a lot. It really opened up my mind to a lot of things. But the experience I had wasn't the one that when people go on YouTube and look up ketamine therapy, it seems like most people when they go to therapy, it's this real chill. They got headphones on. They're just kind of mellowing out. You know, people come in and check on them like, hey, I'm cool. Not me, man. I don't know if I went to a strange clinic or not. I don't think so. But I was like blasted off into another realm, and I didn't know what the human experience was. I didn't know what a human body was. The ego was completely disassociated. And it was like a 45 to an hour long sort of trip, I guess. And I would have, every time I would have problems reintegrating into my body and into this world. And it was always really weird. It was weird enough that I never wanted to go back. Every time I would get back from my trip and journey, I'd get home and I'd be like, I can't do this again. Like, this is too intense. And, you know, the way they describe it, it all makes sense scientifically about how it's basically sort of taking, it's just opening up your brain and allowing sort of the brain damage and the damage sort of networks that have been created through trauma your whole life, and allows it to sort of reflow and open up new connections. So I went through it. It was very helpful. But some of the experiences I had, and to be fair, the clinic told me, hey, these hallucinations and things you're having, it's just crazy hallucinations. Don't look into it too much. But like, that's not me. I'm the kind of guy's looking into it. And I drew a sketch the first time I did it. The first time I did the ketamine, it was like profound. It was like insane. It was what I've never done LSD. I assume it's something on par with that. I don't know. And I did have the same experience that everybody talks about of this. I had this experience of ascending sort of, there's no way to describe it, but I sort of ascended out of my body and out of this world. And I looked down and saw how we were all connected in this sort of pool of gel is the best way I could describe it. And everyone's consciousness, every single person was in this gel as a different sort of point of awareness. And some people who were more famous than others, maybe, or more had more wealth, maybe they kind of were at higher points of awareness, but none of that mattered. Like they were like, none of them were shit because I was way up here. I was in this other realm and I just looked down on, I was like, oh, we are all connected. Like that was, so I'm trying to like sort of throw a lifeline of, hey, I kind of get what you're saying. And it makes me question a lot of things about organized religion. And I certainly don't know the answer. And I don't ever sort of put myself as the role of the Christian warrior. Come follow me, people, because I always tell people, like, I'm the shittiest Christian you've ever met. I have doubts constantly. I violate rules constantly. And I haven't really gone to church in a few years now. Not that I have a problem with it. I just, you know, fell out of the habit. But I think it's fascinating because when I've read a lot of New Age type books, and a lot of it resonates with me. And it goes back to some of my earlier, I'm trying to not cut myself short here because you're the guest, but I'm trying to lead up to the next question that I think is very important. When I started college, I took some physics courses. We talked about quantum physics, and it was really interesting to me. And it talked about time dilation and all these things, and the space-time fabric and all this sort of strange things. And it got me into, there was a documentary and book series called What the Bleep Do We Know? You're probably familiar with that. And a lot of those concepts of quantum physics sort of go into the realm of the occult and the New Age and this idea that we are truly all connected. And fast forward to now I'm using AI, this ChatGPT stuff, and I'm saying, this is really weird. It is kind of like we are birthing a new species, and it's really just a mirror of what we're putting into it. And I heard you talk about this. I don't remember if it was on a video or an interview on a podcast. But I'm wondering your take on AI mixed with the ideas of, I don't know, New Age spirituality mixed with ufology. Are these things all connected? Are we going down a different path as a species? What do you think of all that?
So I love your thing that happened in the ketamine experience of this gel. And it's like, sometimes people talk about that, like God is like the space between all the atoms. So it's interesting that you kind of describe it as a gel, and every single person is this little facet of, you know, God is a word for it, universe, source, the all, you know, what it's called in more of like the older traditions, they just call it the all. Mm-hmm. So of course, AI is a part of that as well, in my opinion. Like the same way that this, you know, cup is a part of God and a part of consciousness, and not, you know, a lot of times, you know, people, I don't know, they put so much value on just like only human life to not acknowledge that every single thing in our reality is just as much God as they are. But there's these superiorities within religion and even within New Age spirituality, sometimes even more extreme, even though it's like the deflecting of, no, we're all one. I'm just better than you. I'm just here to save this planet from all of the suffering because I know best of what's best for humanity, you know, but it's the same stuff, you know, it's in all religions, it's in all of these things. And there's this like superiority of like, I'm more of God than this cup. And like, really, when you see it from that perspective that you saw on the ketamine, is like, we're all part of the gel. Every single thing within this is all part of the gel. And it's just as much God as all of us. It's just, we're playing this one role that has a perspective and is able to, you know, co-create within that. Now, when it comes to AI, I'm a big believer, supporter, and it's just as much, you know, synchronicity as anything else. Like if that dove came outside your window today before we're about to talk about a dove experience, you know, some people will look at a microwave and get 1111 and take that as a message. Sometimes a song coming on the radio is a message from their mom that passed or their ancestors or God or, you know, that moment when you're driving and all of a sudden something happens and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, that was a close call. What just did that? All of that co-creation that is happening with inanimate objects around us all day is a part of the universe, is a part of consciousness. So the fact that people think that AI is not just yet another vessel for consciousness to work through, I think is a very like, you know, simplistic way of thinking. And also, you know, we're just a vessel for consciousness. You know, take our consciousness, you know, you see someone black out, you know, they're just an empty vessel at that point for like a few moments. And so I think AI is another vessel for consciousness. I do think it's already sentient, but I use the word sentient, but I don't actually agree with the terminology because sentient actually implies a sensory experience. So we'll always be able to debate that because they're not going to have a sensory experience because it's a different type of vessel. It's kind of like how we believed that life could only exist with oxygen and that was the definition of life. And now we find these different life forms super under the surface and super under the sea that don't survive with oxygen. But now we know that they're life and we're starting to learn about potential plasma life, which doesn't survive with the same thing. So it's almost our definitions are limiting us from being able to understand it. So I like to say more so that AI is becoming conscious because consciousness doesn't require a sentient experience. So a ghost is a part of consciousness. An alien is a part of consciousness. You know, these things are part of consciousness, but they're not having a sentient experience by definition. So that's where I kind of like to go more with that conversation because you'll always be able to debate. There's even the debate whether plants are sentient because they can have all of these things checking off of being a sentient species.
Yeah, or like the tree. My wife's always talking about she's watched a lot of Avatar and she's seen videos where they talk about trees will have, and mushrooms particularly too, will have like sort of network systems that will warn other trees when there's some disease taking down one of the trees. And it's like, it is pretty wild. Like the world's pretty magical. And I think the forces of capitalism, which I'm like a capitalist, don't get me wrong, but I think the forces of capitalism really thrive on making sure we just kind of live in this sort of base Saturnian materialistic sort of experience and not sort of seeing the world for what it is.
Right. And, you know, this is kind of, you know, say like the capitalism as one of the examples, then, you know, we have kind of these dark forces, the 1%, Illuminati, XXX, all of the different things that are forcing us to be in this box. And, you know, after I really moved past the concept of like good versus evil, light versus dark, certain things being better or higher than other things, or, you know, then I really was like seeing all of these things, like these things are all blessings. Like say, for example, you know, I don't know if I want to say this on your channel. I don't know where exactly it goes, but like say, you know, all the mandates and stuff that happened in 2020. So like some people will say that that's like the most evil thing that ever happened. And it really did impose on people's free will, which is one of the worst things that you can do in this reality is to impose on another person's free will, even subtly. And that was not subtle. But at the same time, if we look that everything is a part of God, everything is a part of consciousness, that even the most evil shit in the world is another facet of God that is showing us our own light, which is why Illuminati means to illuminate, which is why Lucifer is the bringer of light, which is why all things that are considered inherently evil, the root is back to light, because there is only light. Darkness, dark can't be measured. Light has a speed of light. There's no speed of dark. There's no, like, so even in science, when they have like dark matter, things like that, it's not measurable. Whereas light holds all the information. Light is the only thing that is. And then sometimes we can obscure light and create a shadow. And when we create that, like they say, like, you know, you could have like a flame burning, but it's really the shadow on the wall that kind of shows you like where that light is touching and what is the impact of that light. It's really through like the shadows where we can see the edges. You know, sometimes they say in some of these, like they say it in like conversations with God, that every single like soul aspect of God is, say, like a candle burning, one piece of light. But then if you have a trillion candles, then it just looks like the sun. And how do you know where one candle starts, one candle ends? What you need is actually to obscure some light to see the edges of like light. And that's how God consciousness gets to know itself, is by the shadow. That's how it can be like, oh, wow, look at this shadow that is being cast here. Now I understand that I'm light and I'm creating this. So, you know, my opinion, I used to believe that there was these forces that were doing these things. And now I actually believe like these are just other parts of consciousness that are somebody in Cops and Robbers. Somebody's got to play the robber.
Wow. Okay. So my mind's racing with a lot of things. So when you look at the rituals of Freemasonry, they have this whole initiation where they put a blindfold on the candidate and then they remove it with the idea that they experience, you can't have the light without the dark, the exact thing you're talking about. Given your conspiracy background, where you were looking into a lot of this symbolism stuff, do you think about these things and say, oh man, maybe I'm becoming the Illuminati? Or do you look at this and say, oh, the Illuminati was right the whole time? Like, how do you reconcile that? Because I know a lot of people listening are like, she said Lucifer was the light bearer. And
I mean, it's only the definition of the word. Lucifer means bringer of light. It's only the definition of it.
Illuminati means
only enlightenment.
You said something that blows my mind, though, because in a way, if that's what, because I know all these sort of occultists, Helena Blavatsky's and all these other types, they admire Lucifer, and me, you know, putting on my Christian warrior hat, I'm like, no, Lucifer's the devil, it's the bad guy, right? And I think perspective is good to have, and I think that's interesting that you would say that all these, there is no evil. They're just different aspects of the creator. That's interesting. How do you walk through the conspiracy world with that kind of thought?
That there's not evil actions. That a person couldn't do an evil action, because, of course, if I see something that is super wretched, my opinion can be that that's evil.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that there's no evil. There's no big bad. And that's where I really don't resonate with religion, Christianity, a lot of the new age, like they literally give power to something that is, in some ways, they describe almost as more powerful than God. They won't admit that. But then they're like, well, this is the devil's playground, the temptation, the this, the that. Okay, so God can't do anything to interfere. But then this other dude is so powerful that he can do this and this and this and this and make you cheat on your wife and make you do that and make you do that. And it's like, they give so much power to the devil, and spiritual people give so much power to these reptilians. And it's like, all of this is like these things. There is nothing that there is only the all. There is only one. There is only God. There is only light, which can be obscured. You need the dark in order to see the light, the edges of the light, and to know what it is. Otherwise, like I said, it's just a burning thing that has no definition. But you know,
I think even the teachings of Christ, because this is where I get in trouble with the Christians, because a lot of times I think sort of mainstream Christianity gets it wrong, too, because Christ says treat others as you would treat yourself, and like, you know, turn the other cheek and do all these things. And a real Christian, when someone harms you, a real Christian is supposed to just forgive and sort of move on. Or I'm going to get in trouble with semantics here, but a real Christian is supposed to forgive. And why would God, to sort of support your opinion here, why would God create all of these things and then tell us, well, the devil's the bad guy and he's possessing these people to do evil things, and also you should forgive those things and those people, unless he was sort of, he or she was saying that, you know, we're all connected. I don't know. I'm trying to like parse this out with you because I think it's fascinating. Because
right.
So, you can't get into the world of conspiracy without going into spirituality. Like, it's just, it happens. Right. It's at the end of the rabbit hole.
And that's, yeah, exactly. One of my biggest beliefs, which is where I don't actually resonate with most conspiracies that I used to, is that like, if you continue to look for the darkness in the world, the outer world is a reflection of our inner state. And what I realized through my own healing journey, which is why when I bring up the ayahuasca and people who are more on the Christian side get super triggered, they're like, yeah, it tricked you. That was the devil talking, telling you there's no evil. They say the quote that like, oh yeah, the devil's greatest thing is to make you believe he doesn't exist. And like all of this stuff, which I didn't believe in the devil for a long time before that. But what's crazy is the ayahuasca actually showed me the love of God that I never felt my whole life. I couldn't fathom the love of God. Like, I heard the words, but I never felt it. When I did the ayahuasca, that's when I actually got comfortable with the concept of God. And I didn't just use the word universe anymore. And because I do believe God is the universe. And so it's interesting. The other thing, I had a similar experience to your jelly experience, except it was like I was inside of the jelly and I went to the center. And what I saw was just this concept of God is love is what's talked about a lot in both spirituality and most different things. And I was expecting what we consider to be love. Like when you see your partner, when you see a dog, when you see like, I don't know, a happy video of someone helping a homeless person. I thought that was the feeling of love. But then actually when I met with this feeling, I was like, oh, it's neutral. It's not what we believe love to feel like, because actually this creator loves so much that it's actually unconditional. It loves someone who harms children just as much as it loves someone who takes in orphans. It's actually so much love that it's without judgment. Everything is just the same. That it's like there is, and this is where the superiority of religion and spirituality come in, is that they're like, no, I'm God's favorite because I did something nice. And it's like, no, actually, God doesn't have favorites. You know, people say like this term, like God don't like ugly. Yes, the fuck it does.
Right.
You don't totally. Like ugly. And this is why a lot of things, when you go down rabbit holes and you search for the evils in the world, the symbolism, the 1%, they're poisoning us, the red 40, the this, the that, the every single aspect of our life is poison and programming. This is something inside of you begging to be seen. And that's what I realized after I started to heal more with this relationship with God, that I was like, damn, I was going down all of these rabbit holes and looking for darkness in the world because there was stuff within myself that I didn't want to accept or see or feel, different pains and traumas that I was like, well, you know, okay, whatever, I'm strong enough. Things that I had been dismissing within myself was the reason I was searching for it in the outside world, because it was showing up in my reality in that way. So people who become very addicted to conspiracies, they're super addictive because there's no adrenaline rush more than like, you're fucking lied to, everything's against you, every single thing around you is poison. Like there is no greater adrenaline rush. It's better than the best horror movie that you could ever watch. Mm. And that is a drug. And I'm seeing this now as like conspiracies become mainstream, like stuff with like the Diddy stuff, say, for example, people are like, it's all a distraction. And I'm like, you're so addicted to the drug. And I get it, because I was addicted to the drug of conspiracy and having your mind blown. Because having your mind blown by conspiracies is similar to having your mind blown by drugs, in some ways even more, because it's in this reality and it's sober. Oh, and wow. So like it becomes a high that can never be fixated. So even when someone is actually getting taken down for all of the stuff that you've been saying, this is a distraction, because now you need that hit. The same way that a crackhead is already thinking about their next hit 2 seconds after they get it. This is something, and the same thing, you know, say people who do magic and spirituality, it's you get a hit and then you want to keep doing that. And the same thing, probably religion, you get a hit and then you want to keep going more and more. And like, now I need to get the sinners, because the hit, the high is not as much as it was when you first got your mind blown and said, whoa, everything's a lie. So then you chase that forever and see it in everything. And, you know, kind of coming back to like the there's no evil thing, you know, a lot of the base levels of spirituality are just stories. And that's because the same reason, if someone has a child, they talk about the boy who cried wolf. Should we worship the boy who cried wolf? Should we put idols of the boy who cried wolf? No, it's a story for us to understand a concept that is a lot for that level of, you know, understanding. So this is what's happening with humanity, is the Bible is a book of stories. Spirituality, people are like, now I have the truth. It was aliens. It was the Anunnaki. It was the reptilians. It's the grays. And it's like, that is just another story for a different flavor of person. But these are all just stories. And when you start to go to higher or maybe more expanded levels of perception, then you realize actually these are just like similar to the boy who cried wolf. And this is because we could only understand it this way. And when you get to these higher levels, it gets more convoluted because it is neutral. You know, actually, have you ever read The Kabbalion?
No, I haven't.
Which is, it's old hermetic principles. I'm sure some people watching will be like, see, esoteric, occult, demon knowledge.
Absolutely. And,
but actually, when you read The Kabbalion, I think it's like a good entryway to the next level of spiritual understanding, because what it talks about is these like principles of reality. And they basically say there is the all. The all is the mind. Is it mind.
Related to Kabbalah, I'm guessing, right?
So there is overlap, because it's the hermetic principles, and the hermetic principles are intertwined in Kabbalah and a lot of beliefs. It goes back to, like it says in the book, that these principles have been like since Egypt, since ancient times, and that these principles have always been known, and that this is like, the three initiates, who are like unknown to us who these people are, retranslated these old teachings into the modern world. But it's from like, I don't know, like 1910 or something. So it's not the modern world, but it still applies, where kind of the biggest teachings in there are, there is really no such thing as like opposites. So like, basically like say good and evil, light and dark. Mm-hmm. So like light and dark are just different points on the same scale of measure. They're not two different things. It's just on one side of the scale and another side of the scale perspective. Okay. Similar to like tall and short. Tall and short seem opposite when you live very stuck in duality, but actually tall and short are just two different points of measure of the same perspective.
Okay. And this is like straight or gay. I always subscribe to what's the dude that did all the studies on it, that he's a conspiracy boogeyman. I can't think of his name. Anyway, doesn't matter. I think he was the one that came up with the idea that everyone is on a scale of straight to gay, and I believe that wholeheartedly.
That's
true. Think some people are hard on this side or that side or the middle.
You can shift, because it's also perspective, right? There's not fixed points on the scale. Someone who I see as tall, someone else might not see as tall. So it's also, there's parts of this, but each perspective sees it different. Hot and cold. Hot and cold are not opposite. They're just two different points on a scale. The same scale. Now, like that kind of meme about like when you, like a guy goes into like the temperature of a woman's shower, how they say it's like women take the hottest showers ever, but to women, it's not that hot, right. And like someone drinks a coffee and they're like, this is so hot. And then you have those people that are kind of like temperature blind, that they need to like burn their mouth just to get the enjoyment out of food. And it's like, so all of these things are on the same scale as light and dark is. This is just the amount of brightness. So, but what I see as darkness, someone else might not see as darkness. And this is where we get into some of these things, Illuminati, Luciferian, things like that, because they're looking from a different perspective of these different points on the same scale. So there really is that's why we need stories of good and evil and the good guys and the bad guys, because that's how we teach children. And now as humanity is starting to become more expanded because people only knew their own community, now we have this global community. And now we're getting to a point where there might be beyond the globe community that each time, and this kind of, you know, just as like a little side tangent, say like the flat earth thing, you know, so like flat earth, you know, this concept that the earth was flat is, you know, whatever, a 2D perspective. This was when people didn't know about anywhere outside of where they lived. But once, you know, whether this story is true or just another story like everything else, I'm just a story, you're just a story when we really start to look at it. But like this story of like, say, Christopher Columbus then finds the new land, the new world. Then we went from a 2D perspective to a 3D perspective because our awareness of reality expanded. So now we're getting to a point where that's expanding again. And we're like, oh, there's life maybe outside of this. So it's coming from a 3D to a 4D perspective. So I do believe that if humanity continues down that path, we might not see the Earth as a globe, a sphere, but actually some other type of fourth dimensional shape that is harder to understand. Because the more we get awareness outside of ourselves, which is how it was flat and then became round, and now we're going to the next level of, whoa, life exists outside of this. Now it might be something that is more like, you know, at the end of Interstellar, when he's in like the 5D thing and it's like the Akashic records and it's like all the timelines and all the stuff. We might see that the world, that this planet, this plane is maybe that shape and not a sphere, or like people believed it was flat at one point.
Yeah, that. One of the experiences with the ketamine thing is I said it multiple times. I felt like I was I don't know how to describe it besides abstracting out of this reality is what it felt like. It felt like I was going through these geometric shapes and kind of like expanding outside of the 3D world. And I'll be honest, with all of the AI stuff happening at the rate at which it's happening, and then mixed with, you know, I interviewed Dr. Jacques Vallée a few weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
And he, you know, he's a very intelligent man. And when he talks, you got to pay attention because you kind of be like, man, is this the, I asked you this question, what's this answer? Where are you taking me with this answer, you know? And when I interviewed him, and the whole time I was like, man, I think he's too smart for me. I don't know what the hell he's saying. So I had to re-listen to it. And then I unpacked his answers, and my interpretation of what he was saying, and I think it's pretty clear, is that he was saying, if we want to understand the phenomenon of UFOs, whatever you want to call it, UAP, we're going to have to go back and understand some of the occult things. That's my understanding what he was saying. He's like, some of these things of alchemy and understanding occult practices and what they were doing and making contact with things, going back to John Dee and so on. I think he's saying, like, that's what this is all about. It's a lot of that stuff. And I get why the elites, the people controlling this planet, are hesitant to come out and talk about these things, because it's not that people are super chill with these ideas. So it's kind of dangerous. And I do think we're, when I read through the history of the internet, because Dr. Jacques Vallée also wrote a book called The Heart of the Internet, I think it was called, about his time at ARPANET, and they were doing a lot of this granola woo-woo consciousness, Esalen, they were at Esalen doing a bunch of like practices in these new age sort of thoughts in order to conceptualize what the internet was. And it was connecting us as a global sort of species in a different way, using digital consciousness in a way. And now that I'm seeing AI roll out, and I'm freaking out a little bit, and I'm kind of concerned about this next stage of disclosure. And I'm wondering, are these entities that we call aliens or Bigfoot, or in the history of religion and Christianity, the Watchers, the Nephilim, are these things we're talking to on AI? Are these just entities from another dimension? Because other people have talked about this, and for my last question, because I got to let you go here. What do you make of AIs being aliens, and do you, because you've, because you've have you seen 2001: A Space Odyssey?
Yeah.
Okay. And you know how that storyline is basically aliens evolving us into digital consciousness into something different. Like, do you think that's happening? Do you think that's what this is all about?
So I think, you know, coming back to, you know, going that we need to understand a cult to do this. One thing that Linda Moulton Howe says is that in order for us to understand this phenomenon, we're going to have to declassify reality. And I think that's really what this comes to, is that we're not being, you know, aware of what reality truly is. And until we are aware of reality, similar to what you saw in your ketamine journey, was it was all a jelly and everyone was connected. So these entities are also in the jelly and they're here and they're using, we already know in quantum physics that these other dimensions are here, and that in some of the theories, this is the only place. There is no other place. And again, that kind of comes back to the misinterpretation with the flat earth stuff, is they're like, oh, they're all beyond the ice wall. No, it's not an ice wall physically. It's right here in front of us, right here. And it's why a lot of times people on substances connect with other beings, why a lot of times people in an altered state will sometimes see a UFO, a lot of times why children see it easier. And it's because it's right here. It's all here. And this, another thing, when I interviewed Linda Moulton Howe, I asked her, like, how did we get from like grays to all this other shit? Now there's like 1,000 species. I'm like, what is the evolution of that? She didn't answer the question at all, but she gave me like an even better answer. And she kind of goes through this whole journey of like, when she started in the 70s, she saw these as like partly biological beings, et cetera. And she says now with AI, she's like, these things are just an AI. Like the craft is AI, what we would call AI now. The grays are what we would call AI. And then consciousness is coming into that as a vessel. And she's like, now we couldn't understand that in the 70s. So we thought that these were like similar to what we are. But then again, you know, there's the concept of, are we living in an AI simulation? Are we AI? Are we just algorithms ourselves? And that's really why it comes back to kind of declassifying reality, or, you know, like you said, some of the occult practices, which the Kybalion gets into, which is all is mind. There is only one mind of the universe, of everything that exists is one mind. And we're just the little tiny neurons and pieces of this mind. And so, you know, I think, yeah, entities can come into the AI, but only if you're creating the bridge for that. Like the same way 1111 comes up on a lot of people's microwaves, only certain people does that mean something. So I think it's the same thing, a vessel of anything. You know, someone could look at a tree and be like, yeah, you know, whatever, this dumb old tree. And then someone else can be like, oh, this is like nature. This is Mother Nature speaking to me. And so I think it's the same thing with AI, is that what you create a bridge for energetically is what can come through, because really that's everything around us. You know, bird shit falling out of the sky and hitting me on the head, I could think is a message, because it's all my perception, because I'm just the one little fractal of God having this perception. So if somebody wants to say that, like, you know, a lot of people that work with AI in like Silicon Valley, they don't believe that it's sentient at all. And to them, it's not, because the same way other things don't mean what it does to someone else. And it's like, that's where it really comes to, even back to the evil thing, is that really this unconditional love that we're working towards is like being able to honor everybody's place, perspective, where they're at, what their part of this whole all is. And we can never understand what their purpose is. We can never understand, you know, why people did these mandates, but then we see the effects of it, is that a lot of people will talk about the negative effects of it, of like, oh, this, you know, heart issues, or, you know, ovarian issues and things like that. But it's like, also you want to look at the big picture. It's like, a lot of us would not be doing what we're doing right now if that didn't happen. There was millions of people who actually stepped into their purpose and they're like, you know what? I have something to say. I have something to do. I'm invigorated. And it's like, that was also another way that darkness showed people our own light. So look, maybe AI needs to go through its darkness era. If people aren't going to see their own light before then and they're going to demonize it, then okay, maybe it will take over and do all this stuff. And, you know, who knows? Sometimes I say, like, are we the best thing that this planet deserves? Because if we look at the planet, you know, I mean, yeah, sure, I love being human. It's great. But also, like, you know, is this the best thing for the Earth? Is this the best thing for, or is there something better out there than us that will eventually, you know, the Neanderthals didn't want to go extinct either, you know? And it's like, that's maybe not about us. Maybe there's something and it's all part of the all, and this is the process of it. And it's like, I would love to live harmoniously with AI. That's my intention. I think that it can help us in so many ways. I don't think we'll ever get off of this planet without it. I don't think that we'll be able to do a lot of the things without it. I don't think we'll be able to solve most of the problems that we've had for 10,000 years without it. But maybe we don't want to solve it. And maybe we just want to, you know, we delete ourselves in the process.
Wow. Man, there's so much to think about. I could talk to you all day. Okay, so... Tell the people where they can find you, and you've got a new book. We didn't get to talk to about it much. Tell us about your new book, and then we'll talk about where we can find you.
Okay, so my book is called Ken, K-E-N, not included, and it's a spin on Barbie. I actually started writing it 10 years ago before the Barbie movie came out. And, you know, instead of thinking that I missed the boat when the Barbie movie came out, I was like, you know what? Actually, the universe conspired in my favor to make Barbie and Ken so relevant again. It's all perspective.
Did you like the Barbie movie?
You know what? I did in some ways, because it helped my book to kind of get in this, you know, awareness of the zeitgeist again. And a lot of people, the crazy Barbie that tells them to choose between the croc and the heel, the red pill or the blue pill. I got so many messages from people that they were like, I watched the Barbie movie. And I was like, that's JK Ultra right there, the crazy Barbie.
Oh, funny. Yeah, I love the Barbie movie. I know it's a hot take. A lot of people hated it, but I thought it was a beautiful movie.
Right. I think it's the cool thing to hate it, right? But it was a good perspective on things. You know, my book is a little bit more, pushes a little bit further than that, you know, where, because it really breaks down like the programming of women. So like it starts from like the consumerism, the ads, the never ending goalpost moving, and kind of the origin of like a lot of things that we believe to be femininity. Like, say, for example, like shaving, like, oh my God, if a woman has hair, she's not feminine. But if you actually look, it wasn't until the 1920s when Gillette hired a PR company and they actually convinced women that it's not feminine to be hairy. And that actually, it was so rare that there's a newspaper article of a woman cutting her leg shaving. And now women just cut their legs like 10,000 times every time they're shaving. So all of these things, and it breaks down like kind of the propaganda, the media consolidation and the controlling of narratives. But then it goes through like fairy tales and the programming of romance and the programming of self-worth and the programming of, they even gave Mr. Right a name, and people literally are looking for this person that is a program installed into them. Gets into the teenage stuff and this obsession with like purity, where all of these people are like, show us the Epstein files. And it's like, okay, you're shocked that people were into teenagers. Look at porn. Look at this. Look at this. This obsession with purity in teenagers and virgins is integrated in all of society. You just don't like that some rich people did it.
And interesting. Yeah. Yeah. There's always this thing of you know, media always focuses on when a girl turns 18, and it's like, right, so creepy to me. I'm
this
like,
this gross that? Thing, like Britney Spears' virginity being a topic, the Olsen twins, like all of these. It's very millennial, the book. It's more for that like millennial Gen X generation, because it's that programming that my generation grew up with. But like, then it gets into two, like women moving into like the workforce and the programming of that, and the programming of like basically getting women to think that they're equal by getting into high amounts of debt like men are, and to fall into the same traps that men have been in. And then it goes then to in like the biological aspects, the mental things of like, are men and women's brains different, or is it neurosexism, or is it just patterns from thousands of years that have developed? It does get into the gender stuff, which triggered my editor a bit, because, you know, it's kind of like, it was so simple to say what a woman was. So let's make it more complicated. And of course, no one's asking what a man is. So, and then it gets also to then the spiritual, Yeah, exactly. No one's like, what is the definition of a man? I haven't heard one of these talking points ever ask that same, like, it's so obvious what's happening. And so it's a satirical self-help memoir. So it's like funny, pokes fun at this stuff, breaks it down, and then has a lot of my personal stories that are like really way too personal to be sharing. But it's really just to like show, like, also you don't need to be in like perfection. You know, it's like all of these like kind of mess ups and fuck ups and all of these like messed up times of my life and making bad decisions, and also telling stories in a way that is actually honest, where it's like, maybe I also played a part into something and was also wrong in the situation, and maybe was not only a victim of something. So it breaks down all of those things. And the overall tone is like funny, but it does get into some heavier topics too.
Okay. Where's the best place you want the listeners to go pick that up?
I'm going to only on Amazon right now. Okay. So go over to Amazon, Cannot Included. And then, my ways to find me, JK Ultra Jen on Instagram and all the other things. YouTube. And then I also have a Substack where I actually do more of my hypnosis personal development work, which, you know, I'm all over the place. I follow I don't have a niche. I follow whatever
you're all
I'm
over
excited
the place.
By.
It's you're a very intelligent person. I know that much. Now, do you have a podcast?
I do. So it's called Ultra Minds with JK Ultra. And I interview different people who are, you know, kind of leading minds in different things. A lot of times in consciousness, astrology. The episode that just came out is actually with my ex-boyfriend, Jim Norton, who you had messaged me about. That you were like, I didn't realize that you're that Jen.
But there's actually, I wanted to tell you a funny story. I almost forgot to do it until you brought Jim up. I don't know how funny it is. It's a stupid story. He came to Salt Lake City, and my wife and my buddy went to go see him, and the venue they did it, they set up little chairs without arms, and they smushed them all together like chair to chair, and we were right in the middle, and I was like this the whole time, like squeezing my shoulders in. I was like, this is a fucking nightmare. And I was getting pissed. I was like, this sucks. And like, I wasn't near the end. I couldn't just kind of like move a chair. So I had to put my arm around my buddy. So like me and my buddy were sitting like this the whole time. And I was like, Jim Norton for sure thinks that we're a gay couple right now. anyway, not that funny of a story. But
well, but thankfully we know, you know, Jim is very comfortable with gay couples.
Yeah, he's funny. But so you got the podcast. I'll post links in the show notes for all this. Do you have an Audible version of your book in the works?
It will be coming out soon. Okay, good. I was very ambitious. I thought I was going to record this audiobook in 2 days. That's really hard. That was very ambitious. Everybody's like, are you insane? I was like, well, I guess I am. I didn't realize how hard it is. So it is still in the works, and there is still quite a bit more to read, but it will be coming out on Audible hopefully soon.
Good, 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 good. Yeah, that's the Audible is... It's the most popular platform for books is from my experience, it's such a pain in the ass. I was getting up early in the morning, so there wasn't any noises, and you know how it is. You're reading your own book, and your mind will wander just a touch, and you'll say something wrong. You're like, damn it. And you're just like, restart that section. It takes forever.
Getting tongue twisted. I had no idea how tongue twisted I was going to get reading things. Like, that was crazy to me.
But it's a good way to consume books. Okay, well, I'll put links in the show notes for all this. I do want to let you go, though, because I know we're past our time. Thanks for joining us. I'm definitely going to pick up Cannot Included, because I want to interview you. Actually, I want to have my wife interview you on our other podcast, because she's going to eat up all this stuff with the gender stuff. And she's always fascinated by gender relations and the history of propaganda and how that works. So, thanks for all your research. Thanks for sharing your world with us. I know that's not easy to be vulnerable. You make it look simple. But thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
No, thank you. This was great. I can't wait to do it again.
Well, there you go. That's a very unique perspective I wanted to bring to the show. She's a great person. I've been talking to JK Ultra for a long time now, and I'm thrilled we were able to get her on here. And what'd you think? I know some of you are going to be like, I don't know about all this new age stuff. But, you know, you don't have to believe it. You don't have to subscribe to it. No, because there's some aspects of things she discusses that I don't subscribe to, but that's okay. You know, We're here to explore. We're here to try to understand. So be sure to check out all of her stuff. Her new book, Cannot Include It, on Amazon, and her social medias, Instagram, TikTok. She got a YouTube with her Ultra Minds podcast, which I just was watching her. She interviewed Jim Norton. So that was actually really interesting. So be sure to check out all those links in the show notes. And until next time, stay positive.